This is Sandy Burr I'm talking to now, so I don't know which who's answering.
Guadalcanal, First Marine Division.
Right after me.
Hello, Chief Gloucester.
Chief Gloucester.
What else are we in?
3rd Battalion, 5th Regiment, 1st Division.
My brother was a communicator. In the First Marine Division.
In that war?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Guadalcanal, Cape Gloucester. And he got malaria.
I see.
And went back to New Zealand to spend some time in the hospital.
Did you work? You worked in a team, with a team, didn't you?
Yeah.
But your experience from ship to shore, or from plane to ground, or from one spot to another, did you have a number of experiences?
Mostly from the forward command post to back to the regiment,
mm-hmm.
regimental headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
You worked on land most of the time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Were you ever in a very, very tight spot from the standpoint of the battle, combat, when your messages were quite important to the Marines?
Well, there could be several times, you call it tax month, I guess. Mostly in forward CP, where you usually run out of ammunition or some wound that had to be evacuated. You have to send out messages that tend to lead to ask for more medical supplies or food or ammunition.
That's very important.
You were not wounded. How many, this question came up this morning when we were talking to Carl Gorman, how many of the co-talkers did come back? And I had heard that a relatively small number were killed during the campaign. Most of them got back, but some were lost in battle, weren't they?
That's right.
Were there any lost with you, in your division?
Well, yeah. In fact, the very man that I was supposed to work with got killed only after I met him for a week.
Harry Sosa.
Is that the first time you met him?
Yeah.
I didn't know him before.
No, I didn't know him before. So we met in the combat area.
Now, was this Guadalcanal where he was?
Camp Gloucester.
Oh, Camp Gloucester.
That's right after the Guadalcanal. In the same vicinity, island.
I'm just amazed the beautiful English these people have. Of course, the code talkers all had to have good English. But some of you have better English than the pale faces. You feel that the... I usually ask this question. Do you feel that the contribution of the Navajo code talker shortened the war? The campaign was important enough to at least shorten the war. Some people say if it hadn't been for the code talkers, we might never have even been victorious in the South Pacific. Others say, well, as Mr. Gorman said this morning, well, of course it was a combination, and I know that, but how do you feel about the contribution that the Navajos made? Quite important. Would you say? Well, maybe you're being modest.
I think it is, has contributed some real important factors in deciding the length of the war now.
The length
in certain
of the war.
Areas, those areas.
Can you think of anything I should ask him?
Well, I just wondered if he remembers any particular incidents in which you felt you were really under pressure, you know, to get a message.
He said
to
the beginning
that
he was in some tight spots.
I'm talking about a specific that he could relate to us where something was happening that comes to your mind. You know, you describe what happened.
How did Harry Sosa get killed, for
instance? I think he was held by mortar shrapnel.
Were you with him at the time?
No.
He was on the other end?
On the other end, yeah.
But both of you on land.
Yes.
Mm.
he wasn't killed while you were talking with him, was he?
No.
Now, in that case, they then got another man to replace him to be your teammate at the other end of the line. Was that what
well,
you did?
After that, I was alone in the battalion, but I worked mostly with the regimental headquarters. We usually have maybe two or three in the regimental headquarters, mm-hmm. working with three or four battalions.
I see.
All at the
I
same
see.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
On a little higher level, then.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in that case, you couldn't.
You
work with that battalion, but you could work with another battalion.
Usually from there they communicate with the divisional headquarters
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth. They
mm-hmm.
have two or three more men. Division has maybe four or five.
How long did you serve?
Okinawa, and the war was over. That's
oh,
right.
You must have been right with my brother. That's where he ended up, the war, Okinawa.
Mm-hmm.
Ready for the big push on to Japan.
Yeah, right after that, they shipped us to Japan, PP, occupation of China.
Oh, yes. Several, some of the others I've talked to. Dean Wilson went on to William Yazzie. Dean Wilson went on to China.
Mm-hmm.
And
he re-enlisted.
Peter McDonald went on to China.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you were with the fourth, so that means that you were not one of the first.
No,
he was with the first.
I was the first.
He was with the
oh,
first,
I
not the
fourth. But now, were you one of the original Kotokas then? I mean, did you,
original
were
29.
The very original 29?
No.
You came right after that.
I was with the second group that went through.
I see.
The first group wasn't as large as the second group, had about 60 men. So the next about full platoon of Navajos.
Then, since you were at the second group, you knew Phil Johnston.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's. That's right. Now, the first men did not know him
oh.
because he stayed in the background. He, I have the whole history of his life in the book, and I know that he sold the idea to the Marine Corps. But somebody else, see, they recruited these men, 29, and he stayed in the background all the time, but watched the progress. And then, after the first 29 were out, then he came on the scene, he joined the Marines, and then was in charge of the school. And
mm-hmm.
you were there when he was in charge of the school.
Yeah, I was there.
I see it all fits together. Now we have it definitely right.
Mm-hmm.
For a while now, for instance, I talked to some of the Kotokers, the original Kotokers, and they said they never heard of Phil Johnston.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had had a day and a half with Phil Johnston. He told me all about it, and I wondered why. And then I found out that he wasn't with the first ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they, for the 8 weeks or so that they made up this code, he was just checking all the time with headquarters and so forth and trying to get them to allow more men to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And finally there were 420 men who did it. But I'm glad that you worked under Phil Johnston.
Did you go over in a replacement draft to 1st Marine Division? You didn't go over with the 1st when they first went overseas?
No.
You joined them in on Guadalcanal.
Right.
So he was in a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you got over there, they were using the code as much as later on in the war. Is that right?
They were, yeah.
Now they were or were not using it as much.
They
were using quite
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When do you think most useful. When things were hot or when things were a little slower and when they were shifting positions, strategic positions and so forth, when was the code used most? Do you understand my question?
In actual combat.
Uh-huh.
It did take a... used most under actual combat conditions.
Under stress.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The reason I asked is that I know that it had you, the order would be given in English to the Navajo, who would translate it, of course, give it to the other end in Navajo, which it, and it had again to be translated into English and given to the receiver,
mm-hmm.
the officer. And I wondered if it took, you could do it so fast, though, couldn't you? You could do it so fast that no time was lost.
No. That's the English messages were sent.
Mm-hmm. You kept up with them.
Okay. So it was just like, he's giving it to me in English, I give it to you in English, you're giving it to her in English. It went that fast. Well, that's a point.
So you give it to me in English, and I would give it to her in Navajo.
Yes.
She would understand.
Yes.
But she wouldn't understand if she's not trained for it. I mean,
no. Now, did you have any little pet changes in the code with your teammate? Sometimes I know that. After two people had worked together a while, they'd have their own pet way of saying things in such a way that maybe another Navajo code talker queuing in couldn't understand.
Or miss it.
Did you stay pretty well with what you had learned?
The standard.
I stood pretty well within what we were taught.
Yeah.
And I suppose at headquarters this way, you almost have to.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd be talking,
yeah.
It wouldn't be just one team, but you'd be connected up with various teams.
How old were you when you joined the Marines, then?
18.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to.
You didn't have to lie about your age to get in.
No.
Dean Wilson said that he was 16. He had to lie about his age to get in.
Yes, and Carl Gorman had to lie about his age. Had to make it younger, because he was 31. And they weren't taking them after 30, so he said he was 28. So it went both ways.
Mm-hmm. Some as young as 14, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Did you find
the Navajo mission? Was that the group you were in?
No, I wasn't in school at the time. I left school a year before to work in California. And I came back from California, and the Selective Service Board had told me to keep in contact with them. So as soon as I came back to Harmington, I checked in over there, and it just so happened that it was the time when they were getting all these boys together to go to Santa Fe for physical exam.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they told me to stick around. The bus is leaving tomorrow morning.
You didn't have any time to waste, did you?
Well, you were drafted then.
Yeah.
You were pressed into service.
Did you find it? Well, now you said you had been in California, so you then, hadn't you? You'd been on the off the reservation,
yeah,
before you went into the Marine. Some of them, I understand, had never been off the reservation,
mm-hmm,
and so when they didn't know where they were going or anything, and it was a pretty bad experience.
Yeah.
They were frightened about it, and then I understand, as soon as they were in combat and so forth, they were more at home than the white man, because they're used to living outdoors and all that sort of thing. But you found no difficulty then in adjusting to the Marine life.
Not that I remember, no.
And Mr. Wadsworth asked you if you had any trouble adjusting when you returned. Now, some of the, I know Carl Gorman and Dean Wilson, some of the others told us about the enemy way that is carried on for some people when they return. Did you have that when you returned?
No, but my mother insisted that I do get something in their order, but it never did come off. But back when I came back from California, went to Farmington, to Santa Fe, and back after that, I went home and told my mother about it, and she was really sad about it that I didn't go home first. And she insisted then that, too, that I have some kind of a prayer by some of the medicine men over me, which did took place, but not after I came back.
I see, it was before. It was for your protection while you were away.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think these Navajos made good Marines?
I think so.
I have a chapter on the Navajo as a Marine, and I can tell you.
Do you think so?
I think they must have.
Well.
And yet they had to go through the same boot camp that everybody else did, right?
Oh, well, yeah. That's right.
Do you find that particularly difficult? The drill instructors? And
yeah.
Were there any incidents during boot camp?
Come on.
Well, up to this time, before I went to boot camp, I had never shaved. You know, for the first inspection that came around, the sergeant told me to shave the fuzz off my face. You got me started on a habit now.
Still doing it. You don't even have to tell him to now, do you?
I had heard that for some of the Navajos in boot camp, they would come back from the drilling and so forth, fresh as could be, and the white man was just about dead because he had been used to so much outdoor exercise. The Navajo made a very good Marine, that's what I hear.
Did you notice any difference
between the white man and
the
Navajo?
And
the energy they had, and
I noticed too much difference, but I noticed that during dress parade, when the general is going to make the inspection, usually on very hot days. Some of the white Marines just faint, fall over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything like that.
You never saw that happen to a Navajo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that goes right along with what I've heard. That after a day's drilling, hard work, the whites would just collapse and then. And the bravos would get out and do a dance or something. You know, they still had so much energy, and they laughed at the whites because they seemed to be, well, they were outdoor men to begin with, and some of the whites were came out of offices and places where they hadn't been doing this.
I think it depended on the platoons, you know, because when I went to boot camp, we were all in pretty good physical shape.
Mm-hmm.
I came right out of college and went right into boot camp. We were in good physical shape, but we were in pretty sad mental shape.
Yeah.
The drill instructors worked on you mentally, you know, which was all part of the Marine Corps.
Thanks for sharing
that. They were having trouble keeping in step.
Were you in an all Navajo platoon?
Yeah.
All Navajo.
Well, the Navajos, like everybody else, have very tall and very short. And the sergeant was hollering, "All right, you stump jumpers, get your step."
Stump jumpers?
You must have been pretty close to the front of the line. You're kind of tall, aren't you?
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad we sat down. It's been so pleasant. Where were you educated? Where did you go? What, did you go to boarding school?
Right.
And where did you go?
To Lena.
What is it?
To Lena. Lena.
Lena?
To Lena. That's a school the side of Chevra.
Oh.
T-O-A-D-L-E-N-A.
That's one I hadn't heard of. I'd heard of Fort Defiance and some others, but toward Lena.
That's right over the hill.
You never took advantage of the GI Bill after you got out. Did you want to or try to?
No. Well, I started it. But they came up with this